Welcome to Counter Stories, a program by people of color, for people of color, and everyone else. I'm Halili, owner of The Other Media Group, VP of Programming at Ampers, and Counter Stories producer.
And I'm Don Eubanks, member of the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe Indians and associate of Dendros Group.
I'm Luz Maria Frias, former Attorney General and happily retired or semi-retired, working on some fun stuff and happy to be here and join Light.
And our usual host, Anthony Galloway, couldn't join us today, wasn't feeling good. So we hope you're feeling better, Anthony, and we'll see you next week. We do have two really exciting guests joining us this week, and I'll have you each introduce yourselves. We'll start with you, Representative.
Great. Thanks, Lee. Hi, everyone. This is Representative Liz Lee from St. Paul's East Side. I'm honored to be here in the presence of these amazing hosts, and I'm really grateful that Vanessa could join me. I am the first woman to ever represent this district in the history of the state, which is a little crazy. But I guess, you know, 2023 is better late than never. And also, you know, grateful to be the first Asian person to represent this district that is also one of the highest Asian populations in the state. And our census tracts in the district have the highest concentration of Hmong folks in the entire country. And so as a Hmong person, really honored to be that person for the East Side and for St. Paul and for the state.
We're so happy to have you join us. And Vanessa?
Yes, I'm Vanessa Young, and I am the director and co-founder of 30,000 Feet, well, director of programs. And again, I am so happy to be in community with you all in this conversation. Thanks so much for inviting us. And yeah, looking forward to keep chatting with y'all. Let's get it.
All right. This has been a topic we've talked about a lot, you know, trying to get a conversation going and who would be the right people to have speaking on this. And I think we found the right people to be talking about this topic with us. We recently did our 2023 legislative wrap-up session, wrap-up mini-series. And during the 2023 session, Representative Lee, correct me if I'm wrong, but there was a education finance bill passed that was streamlining computer science education. And then this year you're introducing a new bill. And can you tell us about that new bill?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Lee. So as folks may recall, last year we had a big surplus. And so the legislature took that and reinvested that back into our communities. One of the ways was our big education funding bill, right? So I had a really small piece. I had a bill that would start this process of streamlining computer science across all the schools in Minnesota. So we got $1 million for the Department of Education to hire like a CS expert to help school districts across the state and to also form a working group that would bring in diverse voices who are parents, students, teachers, business industry leaders, and you know, folks interested in making sure that our kids get computer science. So my bill passed last year to form that. That working group was tasked with putting together a state plan for Minnesota. And so they released a draft report in February. And so the bill this year is to fund the plan that they laid out for us. They had a draft plan out in February, and their final report will be released on March 22nd, which will lay out kind of like a budget and like next steps for how we can get all of the students in Minnesota ready for the jobs of, you know, the future.
Representative Lee, I was taken aback as I was reading some of the material that our producer Halili had sent to us. And in that, I saw these statistics that really had me, I guess, taken aback, but for lack of a better word, which is that only 12% of high school students in the urban area have access to computer science within their school system, 12%. But more than twice of that percentage in the rural areas. So 25%, right? And then 18% in suburban areas. I mean, that goes against kind of the intuitive understanding and expectation that we would have. So can you help us understand those numbers and whether you were surprised by those statistics as I was.
Yes, absolutely. We're on the same page. And I love that you're asking that to start out with, because it's really counterintuitive of what you would expect, right? Because everyone expects kids in the big city to be learning like the latest thing. And so, I asked Vanessa to join today because, she has this nonprofit that is working to address that need. It is true that like across the state, there have been kind of like patches where like nonprofits have stepped in, or, I went to Center High School and, I was really lucky that we had teachers there, were supported by a principal who said, hey, yes, you can teach a couple of computer science courses and we'll put it in the course catalog and, students can do that. So there are kind of like these one-off programs at schools where, principals get it and they're supportive, or in, places like Hermantown where, again, interested teachers said, hey, we're going to teach this. There's also, some of like the big companies in Minnesota who said, hey, we're going to start, some after-school programs that we're going to fund. So what you're getting at is right now, there's all sorts of stuff going on, and it isn't consistent across the state. I was also really surprised about that like rural urban kind of disparity. The goal of this bill is to make sure that, regardless of whether you're like in Mankato or Moorhead or Minneapolis, you have an equal opportunity to learn about computer science. And so our emphasis is like foundational computer science from K through 12. And that means like even when you're kindergarten, thinking about patterns and understanding and building those foundations for coding later. Getting at your specific statistic, I asked the Department of Education about that. And a little bit of that is like wonky technical stuff in the way that course catalogs for high school classes are listed. Right now, schools across the state are really inconsistent in how they publish the courses they offer. There's a course catalog that the department would like all the schools to report the classes that they offer students in, but there isn't a uniform way of doing that. And so right now, the data gathering piece is also a big issue, right? Schools can fax in their course catalog, they can call it in, or they can email it in. And so MDE said, that disparity might also just be that, there are certain schools maybe in rural areas that are better at reporting their data than schools in urban areas. So two-part answer where it's a weird technicality in the data reporting, but also it just reveals kind of like the inconsistencies in like how computer science is being offered and taught across the state.
And the need that we have in the urban area, right? Which is where Vanessa comes in.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah.
So Vanessa, your organization, 30,000 Feet, supported this bill. And how does what this bill is trying to accomplish, how does that affect your work that you're doing? And tell us a little bit about the work that you do.
Yeah, so the work that we do is really targeted towards youth in underrepresented areas of the tech industry, right? And so we work really hard to collaborate with schools in reference to getting the word out about our programming. So we may, connect with them about information sessions about different tech fields that they can enter in at the schools. But particularly, we really want to have the schools be able to funnel students who have an interest in computer science into our space so that we can give them the proper knowledge necessary. So we make sure that students who, particularly students who have no idea what job they want to do when they grow up, just have exposure to a range of different opportunities in the tech industry, showing them different companies, different opportunities at companies, equipping them with certification, things of that nature so that they can have that exposure. I think another piece that we are working to make sure that young people and communities understand the data behind, we're missing a lot of faces of color and brains of color in the tech industry. And so that's been one of our biggest challenges is doing that education in the communities alongside the schools to get parents and students to know like, hey, this is an industry that we probably want to look into, right? It's in terms of careers, right? A lot of young people still talk about being a doctor, a lawyer, and, you know, and that may not be where we need them as a society. We need them in some of our tech industry, because a lot of young people that we serve in particular have not a lot of opportunities to leave poverty, right? A lot of the jobs that are in our communities are, you know, really stuck, poverty stricken jobs, right? And those jobs are becoming automated. So a lot of the youth that are saying, hey, I'm going to work at Taco Bell, that's not going to be a thing, right, for them in the very near future. So,
you know, Vanessa, when I was looking at the metrics for your organization, I was struck by all the incredible things that you're doing as an organization, but also that this goes beyond, it appears your impact on the students' lives go beyond the technical substantive content that you're teaching them by way of increasing school attendance, right? You've got on your website, one of the metrics is that, yeah, there's 74% increase in school attendance by the kids. So they're definitely being more engaged now than they were prior to your involvement, right? A 52% decrease in suspension rates and 64% increase in GPA, you know, and really engaging them. Can you speak more about how, what your approach is and how that begins to really see the full child, you know, mm-hmm. I would say, rather than just being linear with some of the instruction that may be offered elsewhere?
Yes. Thank you so much, Liz, for bringing that up. We think, you know, we know that it's very important to have a holistic approach to the work that we're doing with our students, especially because there's so much trauma and there's so many things that that are built up against them that cause them to not be successful. And so we do a very intentional job of doing case management for each of those students and regular check-ins with them to ensure that they are indeed on track for graduation. And so we do that very intentionally with those students. And we also provide study hall, right? We do, you know, what those young people need, right? We try and just be as responsive to the needs that we see of the students to ensure that, you know, we have those type of outcomes, right? So we do our very best to just continue to be, to continue to hold them to a very high standard and expectation, and then help them to meet that goal.
I really appreciate the work that Vanessa and all the folks at 30,000 Feet are doing for the young people in St. Paul, you know, who are our future, right? And so really glad they're doing that, really glad they could be here. I know we're setting the groundwork for this, you know, rollout of computer science in Minnesota in the bill, but the bill also does have a section that provides grants too for existing programs like 30,000 Feet, because we also need to make sure that they are resourced for the work that they're doing. So just wanted to add that.
Representative Lee, when I looked at the bill, And I looked at those numbers, I interpret them slightly different. It said 12% of high schools, right? 18% of high schools and 28% of high schools. So that means that the percentage of students who are actually getting in those classes are lower than 12%, 18%, and 25%. Would that be a correct assumption from that?
That's right. And because they're percentages, I'm extrapolating, but because we only have course catalogs or like data for high schools and the courses, that's what we're basing it off of. But yeah, it is high schools, and then that is a proxy for the students they serve.
And I'm assuming that those classes generally are set up as electives, correct?
Yeah, that's the concern. So right now, though, in the Minnesota standards, you could take a computer science course, and I think it can apply for like a math credit, because students are required to take a certain amount of credits, right, to graduate. But the goal here is to say computer science is important enough, like English or math. We're working towards having its own standard, and we're working towards making sure teachers are licensed to teach those standards.
So for an old fogey like me, you know, who tries very hard to kind of understand this discussion around STEM, which didn't exist when we were in school, and or just even the area of computer science. Because I have a daughter that's 21, and she's getting ready to graduate from the University of Iowa in early education. She wants to teach in grade schools, but she, for someone like me, is my computer tech, right? So because, you know, there's a lot of technology that has changed. I mean, the wife and I were cleaning out stuff from our house and we found some old VHS tapes and then realized we no longer had anything to be able to view those on. And that was just, you know, we're talking 7-8 years ago that technology was here. So it's constantly changing, it's rapidly changing. A lot of youth and others are on social media. They use this technology. And I'm sure the youth are on TikTok and all these other social platforms. So what we're essentially trying to do is to get them not only to, I mean, because they use the technology, but what you're trying to do is to get them to understand how to create that technology, correct? And I think sometimes that helps people in understanding what this is about, because it's one thing to use it. And we have many in our community that don't have access to this. You know, I still hear stories that they're, you know, not all schools have computers or iPads for all students to be able to use. So there's that issue. But then trying to switch them from just being a user to being a creator, I think is something totally different. And I commend your work in that area.
Yes. Thanks so much, Donald. I love this conversation. That is exactly the goal, right? And I think what's really important is, you know, we have to understand, like, Black Twitter, Black users are what made Twitter what it is, right? And so, you know, our kids are the people who are like making these like tech products like what they are. And so I want to empower like our kids to create the next Twitter, right? Or the next Facebook, because they don't have to just be consumers, you know, they have to be innovators and builders. And, you know, for me, the important piece is equity. But what does that mean, right? That means they don't just have to be consumers, they can be creators, and they can make money off this, right? We know tech jobs pay better. And right, these are the jobs that are mm-hmm. going to be well paying in the future. So, you know, that's why we all kind of have to have a foundational exposure and foundational access. And that's not the case right now. Right. I mean, the other piece, and I love that you talked about this too, is when I talk about this in committee, I always say I was really lucky when I was in kindergarten to be exposed to computers. You know, we had a parent from 3M who took time to just, you know, hang out with us and show us computers. And we used the 5-inch floppy disks to, you know, hold on to data and memory. But today, right, like 25 years later, we have websites, right, to upload and download things. And so, you know, for me, like in my lifetime, tech has changed so much. And that's why, you know, even if like kids don't become like the next tech entrepreneur, mm-hmm. it is going to be really critical for whatever jobs they have in like 10, 20 years, right, to have this foundational mm-hmm. base. So mm-hmm. I love this, love the conversation, and love, you know, just the way you're thinking about this. You're exactly right.
Well, you know, I wasn't going to bring this up, but I was fortunate enough to go to summer school and learn what they called computer programming back in, oh my God, 1971, 72, just kind of dated myself. And we learned basic Fortran on what looked like a typewriter, and our computer actually was a printout sheet. And the computer, while we were in St. Paul, the computer was housed in downtown Minneapolis. So that, you know, things have changed tremendously since that time, correct? I mean, I'm not even sure they even use that language anymore. So this, you know, and even my father had the opportunity to become a computer technician for control data back in the 60s. He was one of the few Black men to complete their class and actually become a computer technician. So I've had that opportunity to be able to see someone in my family do something like that. And then I had the opportunity to kind of learn very little, very basic. So I find this very exciting, these kind of opportunities. And I, you know, one would hope that through your work in the legislature and Vanessa's work with working with these youth, that we can convince our youth that this is an excellent opportunity and a great field to go into, because the potential is unlimited. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? They can help some of the issues that we have, where we have technology that tracks our face but doesn't do so well on people of color, right? We hear those issues all the time. Right. And, you know, and those are day-to-day applications that they have the opportunity to impact positively across the board.
I think when I was younger, we really wanted to get into doing this. We got one computer for our whole family, right? And there's 8 kids, and so we would have to take turns. And then when one of my sisters who got a degree in computer science, and she's now a UX designer, she would go to school and to college to code, learn to code, and she'd come home and teach the rest of us, because we wanted to learn how to code and make websites. And that was our only access to it, was like one of our sisters got a scholarship to go to school and learn how to do it and to teach us, you know. And nowadays, oh God, now I dated myself. Jeez. Sometimes when I talk with my nieces and nephews about it, they assume like, well, you know, it's TikTok, it's Instagram, it's already there. I don't need to learn all this other stuff. I mean, how do we talk to those kids? Because they know it makes money, but they're like, I'm going to be a YouTube star, or, you know, I'm just going to create a channel. I mean, I'm sure you hear that a lot in the work that you guys are doing.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'd love to speak more about that, because we hear that from our youth all the time when it's time to talk about career exploration and diving into those things. And I mean, we won't dive into our K-3 program, but a lot of our K-3... that is their dream. I was like, oh, okay, that's different than a veterinarian back in my day. But hey, YouTuber sounds like, okay, let's try to work it out. But I think one of the things that we do with our older students, and we're a part of this really cool collaboration on the east side of St. Paul called the Exchange Partnership. One of the things that a tool that we are about to introduce to our students allows students to dream about, okay, I want to have this type of car, this type of, you know, apartment, et cetera, et cetera. What type of career do I need to do that, right? And so we give them then this list of options of the different types of careers. Then we say, hey, these are the skills that you have, or these are the things that you're interested in. So let's see if we can apply that into that said career track. Because the tech, I'm like, we need you guys, you know, to not only disrupt poverty for yourselves, but generational poverty has to end by way of the work that you're doing, right? And we have these type of conversations with our students as well. We currently have placed about 10 interns at Health Partners, and Health Partners was first a little bit reluctant to bring in youth into their internship program, because traditionally it was designed for college students and college students who are computer science majors, right? And those faces didn't look like our faces that much, right? and so I shared with our students that level of knowledge, right? So that they know that you have a duty now to pioneer space into places like this, right? They were like, I'm going to update my LinkedIn. I'm going to do this. I'm like, I didn't even tell you, but that's what I'm talking about, right? Where they have that sense of community in them, right? I think that's what really helps a lot of our communities propel forward, is that we have this sense of, we want to put on for our communities, right? Because we've struggled and suffered for so long that if I get this little bit of knowledge, right, like you were saying, Lee, I'm going to make sure I give it back. I'm going to get this so that I can give it back, right? That's how I ended up in this particular role, is I always was like, I just want to be a good example for my nieces, and I want them to, right? And I want all the children to be wanted to be this role that I'm doing so they can give back, right? So it's a lot about planting seeds and really especially as grassroots, addressing those roots, right? Like, this is why we are here where we are, right? And those are some more conversations that our organization really wants to have, particularly during renovations, because we don't really have a home at that point. So we could just be in the streets having these conversations. That's how we do. Right? About, hey, we probably need to go into tech because this building's ran down. Somebody needs to probably go and become somebody who can build up a new building, right? So because tech is literally taking over, right? So many jobs. And the reason is because, you know, lots of folks want to be more efficient. We want more time to do other things than be working 12-hour work days, right? People want to have a full life, right? And tech has become one of those things that allowed us to be able to have a meeting from our backyard, sipping a cup of tea, right? Mm-hmm. It's because of these kind of tech innovations.
You know, Vanessa, you said so much. And share so much with us that's so valuable. I love how you begin to dissect what the dream might be for the children and then give them an idea, a pathway of how to get there, right? And what they would need to do academically, but also socially to be able to get there. You know, so many times, folks can't connect the dots because they haven't seen it. You know, as Maren Wright Ellman says, if you can't see it, you can't dream it, right? So being able then to show them what that looks like and then to put them in leadership roles where they can open doors and blaze the trails, not only for themselves, but everybody else who's coming behind them is incredibly powerful for them because you're teaching them and showing them that they can be leaders, right? And they're often maybe told the opposite by society, by their teachers, by whomever, right? And so you're lifting them, not only their technical skills, but you're also lifting up their business skills and their social networking skills and their capital along the way. I mean, again, a very holistic approach. I'm really interested in some information that you shared with us during this conversation earlier with regard of Minnesota being one of 31 tech hubs that's been federally recognized and designated by the U.S. for medical technology and industry. And as a result of that, there's going to be an infusion of tens of millions of dollars into our economy. So help us understand how your program can tap into that, but also Representative Lee, how you see your legislation also connecting to that as well.
Yeah, when I heard about that, I was like, that is so timely for our conversation. We got to talk about this. So, you know, and it's so timely too, because out of all of the tech companies, the one that was really kind of ready to take that next step was a medical health partners of all people. We didn't think that would be the first place where we would place some tech interns. Right. But that just speaks so much volumes to how tech is integrated into so many spaces and how important it is to, again, have our youth be competitive enough, equipped enough to be asset in those types of spaces. I just want to shout health partners out because I'm so proud of them because they were like, no, they have to be 18. No. But, and I didn't have to push too hard. I pushed a little. Liz, no, I like to push. I mean, yeah, that's a part of being grassroots and organizing, right? And change. You got to challenge some stuff sometime. But I think that it's so timely because there are so many companies, particularly for our organization doing this work, there are so many companies like, you know, Cargill, Target, these big Fortune 500 companies that have tech backgrounds, right, that may already have their systems in place, but places like hospitals don't have those things. They never, this is a new thing for them, right, the tech industry. So those funds being dedicated to that industry, I think, was very smart on their part. And I'd love to hear more about like what legislative thinks about how, you know, we can utilize those dollars. But for us personally, we really want to have partners in this work, right? When we kind of a holistic partner when we're talking about this work, so that these students have a new pipeline. We know about the pipeline of prison. We know many of our students that we work with are at risk for that. And so we are really excited about an opportunity to work more closely with these companies in a new type of kind of pipeline development. Budget is always a issue. Sometimes, well, budget is an issue for companies who are doing something new that's different, that mm-hmm. they don't, you know, it's a gamble. And so this allows them not to have to gamble. I remember Liz and I were talking, Representative Lee, sorry, you got whole credentials now. Let me use them, girl. Yes, yes. Representative Lee and I talked about how can we create more of a kind of ecosystem with schools, businesses, community organizations, youth, and their families. And this, I think, funds would help us to be able to start working together to innovate together, right? That's one of the things that we absolutely are like stoked about.
I love that you brought this up because of like two things, right? It also is another important part of like, or another angle, another side of this problem. It's or this issue. It's a workforce issue, and that's why this is so important. And then I just want to amplify what you were saying, where I think, you know, often our kids see influencers and they think like that is like a tech job, mm-hmm. right? But you know, there are tech jobs in agriculture, in healthcare, in you know, areas that are new and emerging, because again, our world is just changing so fast that you know, all these new jobs are popping up, right? And we don't have enough people to fill them because partially like they're not qualified or they haven't learned or they haven't been retrained. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to get this address this issue from like a holistic perspective, right? And again, from a foundational perspective, Minnesota is great because we already are kind of like a biotech hub, right? We know that. And so this federal designation is important. It's like icing on the cake for, you know, greater partnerships and for, you know, more capital to flow through. Like it's nice to get a little gold star just saying what we've been doing here with a lot of our companies and even smaller companies, right? You know, is now being recognized on a federal level by the president. And hopefully will, you know, again, spur more economic development. But one really interesting piece that I've learned in this process is that for a lot of like the big companies here in Minnesota, it is really hard to recruit people to come and move mm-hmm. here. Not this spring, but typically, you know, it's a really hard sell to have people come and move to like sub-zero temperatures. But the cool piece is, you know, Minnesota kids, they graduate from high school and they go to our colleges because we actually have one of the highest per capita rates of like colleges and universities. So our kids graduate from high school and they stay in Minnesota and they go to college here and their families here. So they never have to move. And so, you know, for a lot of the companies, like this is really good for them because we're training Minnesota students who are homegrown and they'll enter these jobs and they'll stay here, right? So, you know, a lot of these Fortune 500s don't have to waste money recruiting and, you know, trying to convince people from the East Coast to move to what are usually really cold temperatures. Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's several organizations that are well-funded in the Twin Cities, all about retaining transplants. Like that is their goal. Instead of retaining transplants, we should be training those who are already here. I mean, I think the average time in Minnesota for those transplants, they come for General Mills, they come for Target, they're, you know, they're placed here. It's about 3 years. Before they move on to another place because we can't retain them. You know, they don't feel like they're finding their community here. They're, you know, housed in a condo building with everybody else who works at their company. So we should definitely be putting all those efforts to our own kids instead of, you know, poaching some child from LA to come do the work here. So I'm just curious though, with both of you, like what was your interest in STEM that has brought you to doing this type of work? Because it's not just something where you woke up one day and you're like, I think kids need, you know, better access to STEM.
As you guys stated, many students were obsessed with their tech when they came to our space. And we're like, oh my gosh, okay, we need to figure out what else you can do with this tech because you're smart with this tech stuff. And then we began to look at certificate programs. And we started to look at the data behind the unfilled jobs, right? And how to equip young people to be competitive in these type of fields. And again, about disrupting poverty, we're like, what's a future-proof job that these young people can do? Because we don't want to equip them for something that will be obsolete in the next few years and then they're back at square one. Mm-hmm. We want to give them skills in which they can use at a company, on their own, skills that folks walk away with doing just our, you know, the coursework range from logical thinking, problem solving, all these type of things are critical for any job that they would take. And so STEAM, we like to add in the art as well. STEAM was just like the way to go. It's also something that is very much of interest to young people. And so we, again, wanted to just kind of tap into their interests and help them to see it as an asset, as opposed to a consumer, like you were saying.
Yeah, I appreciate you adding in the A. It is STEAM. And for folks who don't know, it's science, technology, engineering, arts, and mathematics, because again, like the world and the economy is just changing so much that, you know, it's really important to have that creative side, right? And that art side to keep our minds open for like what tech could look like later.
I really love the addition. But to answer your question, yeah, by the way, in the arts.
I'm sure your sister does too. She's the A in STEAM.
Yeah. Right. So, yeah. And I think, again, for me, like I was really lucky to have this early exposure when I was in kindergarten. I always loved computers. Heavily regret not pursuing like coding and HTML like other folks had told me to. And so this is kind of like one way for me to get back at these tech roots. And I also do want to credit my old boss, Congresswoman Barbara Lee, who I worked for 5 years in Congress. She represents Oakland, California, and it's a city right outside of Silicon Valley. And so, you know, for her, she's like, you know, we see all of these really wealthy people who are moving into Oakland and all these tech companies. And, you know, I wrote the first iteration of her computer science bill on the federal level for her because we wanted to make sure that kids in Oakland were also benefiting from, you know, all the tech companies and the tech folks moving into Oakland, driving up rent, right? Making sure that, you know, across the country, kids have equal access to computer science. So she carried that bill to kind of implement and enact President Obama's vision for computer science for all, right? So my work really comes from that because I helped write the first version of that bill. And because unfortunately that bill won't pass on the federal level, the advocates are pushing state level bills. And so I was really honored to be elected at the right time to push it in Minnesota and just have that background to make sure that, you know, we're implementing something foundationally as well. You know, we didn't opt for a high school graduation requirement like, you know, once they passed, but when they passed that, they didn't have enough teachers to teach the kids. And so, you know, it's making sure that we have a good plan from the beginning and, you know, making sure that, you know, we think about everything and we also think about the equity piece and, you know, meeting all the diverse needs of our students across the state.
If I may, that just had me to think about some of the non-traditional ways of learning and course credit that some of our students are receiving right now. We have been working really hard for those students who are behind in credits, right? To obtain high school credit for doing the work that they're doing with us. Because this is very much important enough to information, you know, to graduate with. And so some of the alternative schools have been champions as well as part of the community to allow students to add this type of work to their portfolios in order for them to graduate. And so that is one route that we find, you know, to be helpful for kind of embedding that into the school culture, right? They do, however, come to our campus just so that they have a different experience outside of their classroom. But that is something that we found to be really beneficial for those students.
Representative Lee, you mentioned earlier that this new bill would basically put into action the recommendations from the what the previous bill had done was put together this group. What are some of those actions that would be taking place should this bill pass?
That there's formulae to enact recommendations in the report, and then formulae to existing programs like Vanessa's. We anticipate that the final report will say, you know, we need to establish what a computer science standard would look like for schools and teachers in Minnesota, and we need to establish licensing for teachers because that's an extra way, right, to guarantee that schools, you know, hire teachers that are equipped to teach these courses. I think right now, again, it's a little bit of like a one-off, and it kind of the material and the curriculum kind of varies depending on like how skilled your teacher is, right, and what they're interested in, and so just trying to like standardize that across the state.
So our listeners should contact their state representative and state senator to make sure that this bill passes, is what I'm hearing. I mean, you haven't said it, but presumably that would be helpful, correct?
That's right. Yes, absolutely. Thank you.
Good.
That also goes back to the you know, talking about staffing, right? And making sure that we do get folks who are very knowledgeable in these positions. I remember when we were in school and our media person was always like a very much older person, and we were teaching them how to use, you know, the systems. And so maybe now, you know, we'll have younger folks who have graduated from the 30,000 feet program actually teaching and, you know, being really involved. And so I think as we talk about employment, that's also another great opportunity of being able to really employ people from the community who are experts at these, instead of, you know, trying to train folks in these new and complicated skills.
So Vanessa, you've referenced now a couple of times that Health Partners stepped up and invited and accepted students from your program, which I'm ecstatic for a number of reasons, not the least of which I was on their board for over 10 years, I'm happy that they have taken the lead on this. But more importantly, I guess my question is, how can other employers step up? If we have folks in our listening community that are saying, I'd love the opportunity to host an intern or a fellow from 30,000 feet, can you walk us through that? What does that look like? And what are the opportunities there?
Yes, thank you so much for bringing that up. And I am so happy that it's happening in your lifetime while you serve, and you probably sowed those seeds. That is such a reward. I'm so happy for that. So as far as other employers are concerned, I think it's the reluctancy I think folks are a little bit scared of, you know, having to babysit or, you know, figure out what are we going to do with these interns. And as young adults, you know, think about you as a teenager, you have a point to prove, right? You're there and you're going to, I mean, any mature one anyways, we do try to target the upperclassmen for the most part for our programs. We do allow students who are, you know, sometimes freshmen and sophomore who are a bit more mature, and I'm going to PSEO, I'm graduating early, I want to start my life. So we support those ones too. But for employers to just provide an opportunity to be in the space, to begin to start to build a culture of inclusion, to just really provide exposure into the field is all that we're asking for starters. And to help the students kind of discover what would be the best space for them in those particular locations. And so how we did that with Health Partners is we started off with a site visit. And in that visit, the students talked with an array of staff doing different types of jobs. And they got an opportunity to meet some of the students that have either completed our coding course or
are about to, right? So these are like eligible candidates, right? What Health Partners is doing is adding our students into existing teams, right? As someone who, you know, is looking to get meaningful work experience and add value to the company. We have many, many examples of students who have a perspective that's not represented in these spaces that's been very valuable to Health Partners. Many of the youth that they hired on as interns are still there for like their third year. And they're like, please, can you stay here, right? And don't go to Silicon Valley, right? And one of the ways to do that is to start early, you know, with these young people is to show them that, you know, you're invested in them as much as they would invest in you and your company. Because again, the young people and the company has shared that there's been so much value with having them and their perspectives in those particular spaces. Again, as a grassroots organization, it's very not bureaucratic. It's not a one size fits all. We're always open to having different types of conversations, different ways that students could have that exposure. I think just right now, the information phase of let's get into tech and debunking that it's not about just coding. It's also about looking at data sets and to Don's point about our skin colors matching the right things. Like these are all things that are tech, you know, related that young people I'm sure would be interested in like doing, right? These are like the cool, you know, when you're a young person, you want to do something cool, right?
See, Vanessa, cool stuff. So Vanessa, yeah. you're touching on, you know, so other than just the workforce, to me, it also gives, or possibly could have an impact on decreasing those disparities that exist for communities of color in healthcare. Be it, might be one provider at a time, but the very thing that you're saying, you know, being able to have folks like us on the inside can help toward helping that organization see those things in a different light. And, you know, so because that program, yeah, I was field director for the School of Social Work where I taught at Metropolitan State University. So I placed students in placements all the time. And to hear your excitement talking about this, because I think this is fantastic. One of the things that became very apparent to me, particularly, although it's not related, but in the field of social work, we have a shortage of Native American students who have an interest in social work. And there's a history there, and not a very good one, between social workers in the American Indian community. But waiting to talk to them about it, waiting to try to get them interested in social work in high school is too late. Yeah, you know, we need to start efforts early in having programs that exposes our youth to the possibilities to allow them to dream. Because, you know, you don't know what it is. I still don't know everything that people can do with computer science. But to be exposed to it gives us that opportunity, because you don't know what you want or don't want unless you have the opportunity to see it and experience it. So I think that program is absolutely fantastic.
Thank you. I'm very humbled. But I want to say that right on about they don't know, right? We had two young ladies who fought me, both cohort. They didn't want to leave the program because they loved being at the program, but they did not like coding. And there was, I'm like, all right, I appreciate y'all's grit. I'm so happy you want to be here. We want you to be here. And when the opportunity came to visit Health Partners and do interviews, they're like, no, don't make me, please. And I made them. And they're both currently still employed there. And they are not doing coding. But they are working in the tech industry by way of something that they enjoy, that they got exposed to because they had no idea that they could be exposed to that. Right. They demonstrated to us and the company what was really important for Health Partners. So I always ask, like, what are the requirements? What do you need them to know? what do you want them to, you know, come in the door ready to do? And the big thing was, can they, you know, especially you think about what a bachelor degree says to someone. It says that this person can learn. This person can complete something. That's what they're asking. And I think that's what a lot of companies are looking for, right? Can you help us solve problems, right? And can you help us solve the problems that we're not even thinking about are problems, right? One of the things that one of the students had shared with me was that a person in the company had not known the significance of honoring the land and the sweat, blood, and tears that were put into building this land, recognizing that on the website, right? They're like, why do we need to add that? They're like, why we got to do the land acknowledgement? This is too much. Why are we having this much of a conversation? And she was like, we have to. This is important. And this is why. And this came from a 16-year-old African-American girl about, this is why that's important. And then after that meeting was over, that team was so grateful to have that perspective in the room. Because had she not been in that, you know, room, that acknowledgement may have not happened, right? I doubt that it wouldn't happen, but, you know, there was just this, I think people were able to really kind of understand outside of, oh, this is just something we have to do. It was something more of, oh, we have a perspective here that we were not considering, right? And those perspectives are so important all across the board. Another student is operating as a scrum master, which is kind of a project manager in the tech world, right? And this is one of those ones who are shy, quiet, does not really do much of that type of thing, but she is so smart and so organized, and she is an excellent project manager, right? And so for her to go into that space and try that job out and be like, oh, this is my thing, is like gold for our young people, right? Now she can tell other people, oh, you like planning out stuff too? Be a scrum master. Right. And they are doing that. They are telling each other by the drones. Go ahead. Sorry. I'm just going on and on. I'm excited about this work too, as you can probably tell.
And the students are blessed to have your level of energy and enthusiasm, I was going to say earlier as well. The field of project management and being a scrum master is a highly coveted, sought out skill set. So in addition to the technology background that you're offering to your students, is opening the doors, like you said, to areas that they would not have otherwise imagined, but the fact that they're very well paying. I mean, I have a nephew who graduated, two nephews in IT in Michigan, and they both came out of college earning six figures. And this was, all just in the last 3-4 years. You know, these, like you said, are transformational for them as individuals, but also breaking the cycle of poverty. That I think if we look at ourselves, our crew, I mean, we all have that in common, you know, is coming up in poverty and trying to then disrupt that generational poverty that pre-existed our time so that our children and thereafter no longer have to contend with that. And that's a huge contribution that you are also giving, not only to these, you know, the children and their families, but to community as well. So kudos. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
The companies, that's the companies. That's how you give back to community, is by providing opportunities and support for the type of work that we're all doing.
So who would have thought someone could be a scrum master?
I never even heard of that.
What the hell even is that? I mean, so and so this discussion just goes to show that, you know, there's a whole world out here that our children need to be exposed to. And you know, because in my day it was just someone who led a project. Now they got a term for it, scrum master. See, so I learn everything. I learn all the time in our conversations here on Counter Stories. That just blew me away.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why people like this. They love Counter Stories, because you just learn so much in these conversations. They're beautiful.
It was so great to have the both of you on the show and just kind of scratching the surface of STEM and STEAM and what we can do with it. And I'm excited about the addition of the A in the arts in STEM into STEAM. So thank you both for taking time to be with us today. I'm Halili, owner of The Other Media Group, VP of Programming at Ampers and Counterstories producer.
I got to say that I'm so happy I got to meet you, Vanessa, because it's individuals like you that lead me to believe that our village is healing. So thank you. I'm Don Eubanks, member of the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe Indians and associate at Dendros Group.
And before I sign off, I want to say to our listeners, if you have an opportunity to hire one of these students, reach out to Vanessa, 30,000 feet. I'm Luz Maria Frias, former Deputy Attorney General and living life as a semi quasi retired person, having fun.
And our very special guests.
Great. Thanks everyone for the lovely conversation. I love sharing ideas and really just thinking about how we can prepare our youth for the future. And, you know, so grateful to be in community and part of this conversation. Again, this is Rep. Liz Lee from St. Paul's East Side in District 67A, and grateful to be trying to equal the playing field and streamline computer science for all of our kids in Minnesota. Thanks.
I'm Vanessa Young, the Director of Programs and Policy at 30,000 Feet, also the co-founder here at 30,000 Feet. I am so humbled and want to express my gratitude for you all hosting an excellent conversation and providing us with a platform to share. We really, really appreciate it. And thank you so much again for having us.
This has been Counter Stories. What's on your mind? Let us know and find us online at counterstories.com and on Facebook and Instagram. Counter Stories is a co-production of the Counter Stories crew and Ampers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. For our full conversation, visit counterstories.com or wherever you get your podcasts.